Hi everyone, from Dixon and Top 10. You guys are doing great. Sick.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Tune in every other Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. for Blood on the Saddle with your host, Dan N., for real, authentic country.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. It's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself and joined by co-host Connor Neckleput, who's in the studio now. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing righteous, my friend. I'm doing very well indeed.
Really? What brought on this spurt of excitement?
Maybe co-host, finally. Then we're almost done.
Yeah, we've only got two more shows. Gotta, you know, don't want to burn any bridges now.
No, right? Exactly. And I appreciate that. It's a gesture of goodwill. I know we've had some arguments in the past, but I'm glad we put this behind us.
Oh, so touching. But without further ado, it is time for some comedy. This is the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoy.
Warning, the following programming may not be suitable for anyone. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of White Noise! I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Patagonia. Camping gear for people who can afford not to camp. First up tonight, someone's at the psychologist!
Hi, Billy. How can I help?
Well, you see, I
think I have a split personality disorder.
Really? Well, I can assure you, such occurrences are usually bollocks.
You see, I have noticed that when I'm with a girl, after we have sex, I turn into a completely different person.
How so?
Well, before I'm attentive, kind, and interested in looking at their Pinterest profile, but as soon as we've had sex, I can't stand looking at them.
And how long does this persist?
Depends on the refractory period.
Naturally.
I've tried to ignore this side of me, but he makes such good points.
Well, there is a simple solution to all this.
Really?
Yes. Stop having sex with annoying people.
I never become distant after sex. It's the girls who usually run away. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back.
Cole, what are you doing?
Just a bit of origami.
Usually, you use paper for that, not your orifice.
Doesn't it look like a swan?
No.
Squint at it.
Oh, it's squinting at me. Get dressed. We've got some work to do.
Oh, you got a job for us?
No, we're going to rob an old people's home.
Oh, but we already nicked a load of Werther's originals already.
Yeah, but it's pension day, mate. Plenty of half-blind, slow people walking around with cash in their pockets.
Oh, just like that time when we robbed those drunk professional footballers. How are we going to get in?
Oh, no worries. I got some uniforms. I'll be the janitor. You put on the nurse's outfit.
That is not how the nurses dress.
All right, fine. It's a nurse's costume for strippers. But it'll do. Put it on.
Where did you find this?
Your mum's closet. All right, let's try in here.
Hello, is it time for my colonic?
Oh, God, no.
We're just here to steal your cash.
What? Heal my rash? Okay, let me pull my skirt down. You better have a lot of cream.
Ah, God, no. Keep it on. I'm just going to water the plants.
You don't have a watering can? I'm old, not stupid. Oi, what are you doing with my purse?
We're checking it for contraband.
Get your own speed. I need that for bingo later. It's how I do 6 cards at once.
What? There's no money in here.
Of course not. Can't trust people these days. Keep mine down my cleavage.
Oh. Well, go on, Carl.
Piss off, Neil. I might sleep in a kennel, but I gotta draw the line somewhere.
Oh, hello, nurse. Here for a sponge bath.
Oh, go on then. Yeah, I'd love one.
I meant you give me one.
Oh, forget it then.
Shut up, Carl. Just here to fix your tiles, sir.
Fix my piles? Fine, let me get my trousers off.
No, sir, your tiles.
I heard you the first time. One of them popped, I think.
Oh, I'm gonna be sick.
Oh, see? That one looks like Gary Busey's face.
Run, Carl, run! Let's try one more. Can't get any worse.
Being old is disturbing, Neil.
Well, seeing you in that nurse's outfit isn't much better. Hi there. We're just here to read you a story.
Oh, well, I haven't got any books.
What about this one?
Oh, that's my diary. Oh, well, fine. Go on, then.
Go on, Carl.
Okay, well, top. Today, a winter towel.
Give it here. You do the other job.
Righto.
Today, I went to water aerobics and fooled around with John the Widow with the big cock.
It's pronounced cock, love.
Big cock. And was disappointed as he only lasted 5 minutes. Then had a major coronary, and I've been itchy ever since in my vag. Ah, oh, that's enough of that.
Oh, you're just getting to the good bit.
What, the bit where I throw up?
Got it, Neil.
Oh, brilliant. All right, see you later, love. We're going now.
Oh, well, hang on. Can you bring me some penicillin at least?
Nice work. How much you get?
$4,000.
What, really?
Yeah. Daft old lady left it in an old Monopoly game box.
Cole, That's Monopoly money, you twat! I try to visit my grandma in her old people's home as often as I can, but security won't let me in. Next up tonight is the news report!
Welcome to the CBS Overweight News. I'm Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And I'm Wreck-It Ralph. Tonight, reports are coming in of a legal battle in Ohio concerning a man who is a notorious flasher suing a victim of his for defamation after she laughed at his undersized package.
Claiming a recent unseasonable cold snap caused unprecedented shrinkage to occur, he feels he has been misrepresented in her subsequent tweets and her Instagram posts about the incident.
The defendant in the case, who online goes by the username ClassyBitch69, wrote on Twitter, "Just got flashed. Dude needs a shave." And "Can't stop laughing. Looked like Charles Darwin's face."
She also posted a now infamous GIF on Instagram that has been shared more than 8 million times.
It hit the front page of Reddit and was on Facebook a week later.
ClassyBitch69 has defended her actions, claiming by exposing himself he had made his genitalia public domain.
There is no precedent in such case, so legal experts are watching it closely.
Which, due to its size, is probably necessary.
A judge will rule in the case as the flasher has refused a trial by jury in an attempt to limit his exposure.
Seems a bit late for that.
I would never flash somebody. It's gross and disturbing. And I'm enough of those already. Next up tonight is a meeting of the mobs.
Let us address our first action to combat climate change, lowering emissions. Now, the New York Mafia have made great strides by adopting hybrid drive-by vehicles.
Not only that, but they run much quieter and smoother. Great for running people over. We actually have an agreement with Tesla. Now we're not only the pimpest G's in New York City, but the greenest, too.
You should all take note of that. Now, Yasmina, how are the cartels coming along?
Very well. We have planted 1 million cocoa trees this year.
Excellent. And how? What about the triads?
We are working very hard, but we are making slow progress.
That's not good enough, Hal.
Oh, come on. You always come down on me. Last year, the New York mob used over 1,200 grenades. Do you know how much CO2 that released?
Hey, we're in the process of shifting away from a C4-based economy.
Or how about the cartels who keep using gasoline to make cocaine? Not to mention how much Mary Jane they burn just to get high.
Marijuana is medicinal. After you have killed as many cops as my soldiers, you need something to relieve the anxiety.
Hal, you are right. But what you need to focus on is China. How is the solar power plan coming along?
It would be a lot better if we could actually see sun.
Sure, but the fact that the smog is so bad is exactly why you need to take more robust action.
Why do we end up having to do solar power? Why couldn't the cartels have got that one?
We are better suited to growing trees. Ever heard of the Amazon?
And what about New York?
New York City isn't exactly as big as China, you know. It's hard to make such a big difference.
Actually, Eddie, I'm not sure I can let that slide. In terms of sustainable growth, cities are what we have to look to for the future. Didn't you read the journal articles we assigned you?
Yeah, all right, so what are you up to, Mr. Stiff Upper Lip? Haven't heard jack shit about what the East London Massive are doing.
We are focusing on education. Kids in the council estates need to be taught what is and what isn't sustainable. For instance, in the first quarter alone, we have increased our use of biodegradable body bags by 250%.
Oh, while that is impressive, it is too easy. Where is your sacrifice?
We are sacrificing plenty. We have entirely dismantled our convoy of Humvees, and now our hard men drive around on bullet-resistant bicycles.
All you do is split hairs, London. No one has made the same efforts we have. Solar, wind, little turbines that spin in streams.
You're such a joke, Hal. We've had to change the dietary choices of a whole city to move away from a meat-based diet. What have you seriously done?
Do you want me to fly over to New York to kick your free-range ass?
You see, this is exactly part of the problem. You're always flying back and forth between Macau and the USA to sort out beefs. Nearly 12 times a month. Think of all those fumes.
Oh, this is so easy for you in New York. Us and the cartels operate much vaster networks, so we have to use more resources and energy. Not to mention sending agents to Los Angeles and Milwaukee for mandatory sustainability training.
Be that as it may, you are simply not pulling your weight. And for the record, you are right. Yasmina, your cartels need to cut down on Jeep and Army vehicle transports. They're outdated gas guzzlers.
Well, if we are going to throw stones, my sources tell me that you have been investing heavily in mineral and resource companies.
We're trying to create more profit so we can invest in emerging technologies.
Oh, sure. And if we did the same, you'd be coming down on us.
It's about balance.
Balance? Bullshit. You and Nueva York always get special treatment.
Fuck you. We get special treatment because we do the best job.
The best job of cheating?
What did you say?
Oh, come on, Daddy Yankee. I can take you and London down myself.
Oh, you want to fight? All right, sure. Time to reclaim the USA from you Chinese and Latino posers.
Disembowel you and all your familia. Yes,
let's dance, motherfucker.
I'll take you all down with me.
Oh, stop. Well, this is an unexpected turn. Well done, guys. I am very proud of you for switching to knives. Much cleaner than guns. I see that gentleman over there even has brass knuckles. Excellent choice. All right now, let's do this. Environment first, lives later. On my count, 1, 2, 3.
The environment should be an important issue to everyone. Now, if we could just get the US government to understand that, we'd be all right. Next up tonight, we return to our favourite diarist, Terence Tripoli. Yeah.
Dear Diary, today I awoke to find myself naked and surrounded by screaming yoga enthusiasts. I'm beginning to suspect that PCP doesn't stand for Peaceful Calming Potion. After my failed bid to join the Scientologists, I haven't given up on finding a suitable religion to calm the inner terror my mortality gives me. So I decided to try a new one. So which better than the one that has brought terror to the entire world, murdered millions, and brainwashes young people everywhere? I decided to become a Catholic. The local cathedral is a quaint billion-dollar building with a style that evokes a certain reverence slash capitulation that captures the essence of religious life. I entered and left quickly, remembering most places have a no-shoes, no-underwear, no-service policy. After swapping a few of my teeth for a homeless man's rags, I re-entered and found a priest. He spent an awful long time in a cupboard with a choir boy, but eventually came out and greeted me in good spirits. He suggested I return for evening mass, but could amuse myself in the church in the meantime. Though apparently not in the way I enjoy amusing myself the most, he did, however, watch me amusing myself for a few minutes before interrupting me with this suggestion. I wandered around and read the 14 stages of the cross depicted on the wall, which was somewhat interesting, except the epilogue was a bit unbelievable. Outside, there were lots of gravestones with people's names on them. Not sure what any of them did to deserve such prime downtown real estate in death. The living could make better use of a Whole Foods and Starbucks adjacent property. Back inside, I noticed there is one of those boxes where you go in to confess your sins. I went in and confessed mine. This took about 3 hours and only stopped when the priest begged me to whilst vomiting in the next booth. At the evening mass, the priest spoke in some foreign language, which just goes to show my grandmother was right about immigration. Then he asked us to eat a cracker and some wine, which would have been great if I hadn't just traded most of my molars. Apparently, these items were the blood of Christ and his body. But for a man with a six-pack, it seems strange his body has so many carbs in it. Though, being 2,000 years old, it made sense the crackers were rather stale. If I was to come back as snack food, I'd come back as something a bit more exciting. Maybe a vol-au-vent or a steak and kidney pie. Churches are decadent, so why isn't the food? Towards the end of the service, I was bored out of my mind, but then we got to sing. I didn't know the words, so I just sang Sweet Child of Mine. People only noticed when their song ended and mine still had four verses to go. Once the service had finished, people stayed to chat and discuss Jesus, which seemed to me to be beating a dead horse, as he'd come up a few times during the service, but they didn't appreciate me pointing this out. The priest then invited me to a meeting for special parishioners called AA. I can't wait to see what that's about.
I've never been curious about Catholicism. If I wanted to feel guilty, I'd go to dinner at Mum's house. Next up tonight, we return to my childhood in Blackmore, beautification, Benadryne and bricks.
Remember, class, your oral assignment on oral hygiene and oral sex are due orally tomorrow in my office. No latecomers, thank you.
Hey, Blackmore, wanna play footy?
Nah, I'm busy. Got some smoking to do.
Smoke while you're playing like the professionals do.
All right, fine.
Oi, Blackmore!
Shit!
Where's my payment?
Leave me alone, Ned. You took my beer money yesterday.
Well, I need more. Saving up to buy my dad a present for when he gets out of prison.
I don't give a shit. You can't have it.
Then you're dead. I'll see you at the field at 5 o'clock. You better bring a body bag.
Shit!
Don't worry. I don't think he can tell time.
I'm so screwed. What am I gonna do?
Just kick him in the nuts.
If I do that, next week he's gonna remove mine.
Then I don't know. Move school? Run away? Shave your head and pretend you're Gandhi?
Who's gonna believe that? That I'm a fat Gandhi? I look more like Jabba the Hutt.
That could work.
Well, I guess I'll just have to pray for a miracle.
My mum had a miracle happen to her.
Really?
Yeah, she saw Jesus' face in a snowbank.
What?
Yeah, it was all yellow, but definitely him.
How does a pissy Jesus help me?
That's just interesting.
Oi, Fatmore, you're dead.
Bollocks.
Come here, you little twerp.
Ah, leave me alone. You can't hit a kid with psoriasis.
Just watch me.
Oi, you little shit. Leave my Richard alone.
Oh, Mum.
Gah, fuck off, you old slag.
Come here.
God, my nose. God, that hurt.
Have some more.
God, stop it. God, I don't like it.
Teach you to mess with my son, you asshole.
I'm telling.
Yeah, go on and do it. I want a reason to batter your mother too, stuck-up bitch.
Not fair.
Cheers, Mom!
I don't know why you're smiling, you big pansy. That kid's a foot shorter than you.
My mother continued to fight my battles for me until she put Michael French in a coma and the school banned her from coming to watch chess tournaments. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Caitlin Docking, Nick Rinker, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Neckleput.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise Show for another week. We unfortunately only have two more shows to go. It's sad to hear. But we are stretching them out a little bit. There is going to be one next week, and then we're probably going to have one that isn't the actual show the week after, like probably one of our specials, something like that. And then our final episode will probably be, I think, the 23rd of August. So we're going to stretch it out a little bit, but the end is nigh, sadly. But we will still be around in some capacity because many of our troupe are going to continue writing and performing live in town. So keep your ears peeled for information about that. We'll definitely update our Facebook and let you know what's going on. If you missed us Tuesday with the fictionals, you missed a good show, didn't they, Connor?
I guess. No, it's funny. Yeah, so we teamed up with the fictionals, the commercial drive-based improv troupe.
Café de Soleil.
Yeah, Café de Soleil with Daniel Chai. We had a little crossover show. They usually host a once-a-month crossover improv and something. And this week, this month, it was improv and sketch. And we were their designated hosts, which was a great sort of debut for us on the commercial drive scene. Apart from that show we did at the Havana.
I was going to say, we did perform on commercial drive, and we performed at the Colch.
So it's a commercial drive, though, is it?
It basically is.
Anyway, it was a good show, and you definitely missed it.
yeah, they definitely did if they weren't there. But yeah, so definitely there'll be more live shows coming up in the future. Coming up right now, though, is the White Noise after show, so stay tuned for that.
Better than the live show, arguably.
If you don't like comedy. Because, yeah, you know, we might have a few jokes, but really the after show is a bit more, you know, a bit more serious. Well, not serious, but it's... I don't know. It's a different tone. It's a different.
I can't tell if you're being serious right now.
it's on a different key, I would say. But yeah, so we'll get that started right away. We're going to play some kick-ass music as we always do, and then have a chat about some important issues. So first up tonight, we're going to play something by the Shiverettes. This is Broken Record off their self-titled album. Enjoy.
Skip, skip, skip.
There we go. That was Blessed with Headache from their EP Blessed. Yeah. Not a bad tune. Not a bad tune at all. And of course, before that was the Shiverettes with Broken Record. All right. So you're listening to the White Noise After Show, hosted by Simon Welton and Connor Neckelput. So our first topic tonight, mate, I think is there was a news article today about Canada looking to continually, apparently this has been going on for a while, it's their fourth attempt to revoke the citizenship of a 93-year-old man who was admitted to being a former Nazi death squad member. And so we're not really talking about the intricacies of this particular case, but rather the broader question of, is there kind of a limitation to going after war criminals? Because to me, because you know, not just this case, but there's a lot of cases we hear still about in Argentina, which is kind of a haven that they went to after the war, and a few other places in South America of people chasing down and prosecuting people who took part in the atrocities of World War II and the subsequent wars. But you do kind of wonder, like, is there not a limit on when we kind of go like, what does it change now at when the guy's 90 years old to stick him in prison? But maybe it does change something. That's why we're asking this question. What do you think, Connor?
Yeah, it's a funny one, because obviously on principle, you would say, you know, anyone who commits a crime, certainly one is as grievous as what the Nazis did during World War II to people, you know, the soldiers they fought against, and, you know, the various Jews, the gypsies, were they in prison and concentration camps. You got to think on principle, yeah, like you got to show them that that was wrong and justice needs to be served in some way or form. But that kind of totally ignores the fact that people's actions and their identities and, you know, the characters they want to be, the kind of people that they want to be. This example, this Canadian guy who says he's 93, he would have been, you know, about 21 oldest if he was still knocking around in 1945. So he wasn't even a man yet. He was literally, like, perhaps between a 16 and 20-year-old kid. To hold that person, who's not even matured properly and may have been indoctrinated by, you know, the Nazi youth programs, a sense of patriotism, perhaps, or a duty to family, and prosecuting him so many years after, he could be an absolutely different person now, having spent decades in Canada. You wonder if it's appropriate for the individual to dole out justice based on a principle. And I'm not sure what the right answer is.
Totally, because, I mean, even just the idea of principles, like, principles can get you into trouble. This is why I'm kind of an advocate of particularism, because if you constantly stick to these, you know, commandment ideas of values, you could do yourself more damage than good, potentially. But also, I mean, another interesting thing about this idea is that those who lose a war will be prosecuted for war crimes and the things they did.
Yep.
But the people who won the war could have as easily have done just as worse things.
Yeah. Who's going to prosecute a war hero?
But you wouldn't see similar prosecutions on the Allied side post-World War II. You know, prison of war camps existed in the Allied.
Yeah. I'm sure rape was a tool of war by Allied soldiers. Yeah.
Like, who knows what went on? And yeah, it's to do with the dehumanization that propaganda brings, and the, you know, atrocious tactics that are used to win such a lose-lose situation, which is a war.
Yeah.
And so it does seem that also, if you're a cog in the machine of war, your responsibility, you know, this is a really tough question. I'm not saying that this is a black and white answer, but at least think about the fact that if you're a cog in the machine of war, what is your responsibility to what happens? Because, you could be arguably, I'm following orders, I'm doing what I was told to do.
They were going to shoot me if I didn't.
Or I got shot in the head. During World War One, there were plenty of British soldiers who, if they refused to go over the top of trenches,
they were shot.
Yeah, they were lined up and shot. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure there to do as you're told and to follow direction.
Yeah, I mean, the way armies are drilled to manufacture that loyalty and that sense of obedience is literally by making their own officers scarier than the enemy, so that you're more scared of your commanding officers than you are of the guys in the trench. And you combine that with patriotism and indoctrination, But that, for centuries, that's literally the guiding prospect of how armies became so rigid and structured. You think of all those like Minutemen in the colonial wars, moving forward in squares and ranks, being shot at. The only reason they weren't breaking lines is because they were terrified that if they did, they'd get shot by the commanding officer behind them.
But it's also gotten more sophisticated last while as well, because there were statistics that came out that during World War One and Two, there were many soldiers who would aim above the heads of other soldiers and would actually, attempt not to shoot enemies. And
would do their best to make it seem like they were.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, try not to cause harm, yeah.
So they've ended up actually adjusting the way that they do indoctrinate people to make it even more successful at getting them to just go along with orders. And so, yeah, we're getting a little bit away from our original question, but it does seem like there's a lot of argument to be made on both sides that perhaps, like, is there not a time when we just say, let bygones be bygones? And you know, if someone's lived in this country for 50 years, has been a model citizen while he's been here, can we not just let him be in his last final, like, I mean, if you're 93, what kind of state is he in anyway? Like, he's obviously going to be physically reduced probably mentally as well.
I mean, I know in certain countries in Africa, they've had the sort of peace and reconciliation kind of initiatives where they've actually tried to say, like, during some of the atrocious civil wars that have happened there over the last sort of half century and more, that people who they sort of, there's a kind of like a blank, a clean slate for everyone, so that no one's going to get convicted of war crimes. But what they do is try to bring people together who are on different sides, and you hear stories of people of people who raped family members, during the conflict, and then were confronted by them with them, years later, and getting a certain sense of justice in that way, that, you know, the remorse, the regret, the terror, the horror of those memories, being confronted with what could be your worst nightmare, in that physical manifestation, and sort of saying, yeah, you know, like, bad things, like, seriously bad things happen in war, and both sides are guilty. And so instead of trying to simply, punish the losers, try to actually bring people back together and try to give everyone a second chance in a certain way. Because people act so differently in war and times of crisis. There's primal urges, all the indoctrination. It sends you sideways. On the other hand, though, how, if you're going to have a constitution, you're going to have laws, you're going to have regulations about what is just and how we punish those who commit against ills and sins against society, how can you say, oh, well, what age is bygone enough that it's okay? How can you maintain a rule of law if you're kind of going to willy-nilly going to make exceptions? Oh, that's 20 years ago. Oh, that's 10 years ago. So,
but it's interesting that with like the Geneva Convention, you have these like lines really drawn in the sand about what isn't and what is acceptable in war. Like, you're not allowed to use cluster bombs, yep, in theory. You're not allowed to use chemical weapons. But you're still allowed to bomb and murder as many people as you want under the conventions of war. And
it's like the idea is, as long as they're soldiers and not civilians, and you're using appropriate military means and not nefarious chemical weapons, basically, as long as they can do the same back to you, that's fine.
Yeah,
which, in a way, just seems
still quite incredulous.
It does. In one hand, it's like, well, it kind of makes some sense, but of course, like, how are we going to prosecute anyone based on that?
Yeah,
it's hard to stick to it.
Anyway, all right, let's play another song. We'll come back with another topic. This track is something I'm very excited for. This is an English band. I don't know. I think you could call them at times punk. At times you can call them hip hop. They go back and forth. They're called the Sleaford Mods, and this song's called Armitage Shanks, which, if you don't know, is a make of toilet.
No, I had no ambitions in that field. I couldn't care less. I just get on doing what I do, and I do it very well, thank you. This is why I'm not tolerated. I can't be bothered to tell a lie. There has been something as revolutionary as the Sex Pistols, the ongoing force of me, and this you must never forget.
Toilet!
spanking her off the other day and she's pulling a really strange face. These things happen in situations like this, so I carried on, made her come all over the place. Then she tells me that she was imagining me to be a complete stranger. Well, thanks a fucking lot. Nice one. Lovely. Next time then, darling, I'll tip up to yours wearing a mask and postman's uniform. Leave the door unlocked, just bend over and I'll shove it up your arse. Throw a few letters on the floor, just for added effect. Bob's your uncle, there's your random sex. Seven knackered fridges dumped on a piece of wasteland next to an arse that's burning bridges with all its neighbours. 25 kids sharing two rooms. That's the smart price. The bus stop's a youth club. Sovereign cigarettes and mushrooms. Armitage Shanks. Oi, Tyler. Tyler. Armitage Shanks. Oi, oi. Tyler, 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 Tyler. Well, what are you saying, bro?
Would you like a drink?
I'll go.
I hear you're the toast of the town. Can I kiss your arsehole?
You don't tell my bird you want to fuck her. You fucking leave it, Michael. You don't say nothing. Sexual encounters like that take a while. She's got to get her head around the fact that you're a fat bastard with ginger hair. That's no offence to people with ginger hair, but I won't want it. I'm sick of being talked down to by desperate blokes in Marishi snow pants. That shit went down with Scaramanga. Wait, salute, yo! Armitage Shanks! Oi, Tyler! Tyler! Armitage Shanks! Oi, oi! Tyler, 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 Tyler! Well, what are you saying, bro?
Would you like a drink?
I'll go!
I hear you're the toast of the town.
Can I kiss your arsehole? Another do. I've been invited to that many do's over the last 6 months by people who didn't want to know me 8 months ago. Makes you sick. I won't mind, but 98% of the music in this city is fucking shit. Fucking shit. Armitage Shanks, a toilet fucking culture. And if you're not getting your arse shagged, then you're the phantom bummer. You've heard it all before. You're going to hear it all again. Well, what do you think I'm going to sing about? My endless love, you fucking freak.
You won't have your looks forever. And when they're gone, what are you gonna do? Now give us a kiss. I can cook, and look at the size of my tits.
I'd rather die in the gutter, darling. Forget about it. Ah, what'd you do, man? When you're on your last legs and you ain't got a plan. Your sheets are full of blood stains, bruises on your thighs, shagging the right bird. Your bed surrounded by beer cans, empty chisel bags, mangled by your teeth, trying to get at the fucking rock that's melting underneath. I'm a vampire. I got homemade fangs. I make Shane McGowan look like a cross between Joan Collins and Karl Lagerfeld with his fan. Messy fucker. Messy fucker. The state of your life, it's upstated mine. I've got oil on my ladder, it's on there all the time.
And Wayne Fontana, he did it.
Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Toilet seat, shake. Your wits, it's just a toilet seat. Living off your... That's too long.
Kitchen in a trailer park, pale light.
All right, there we go. That was Teenage Wedding with Flesh Prism off The Great Sadness. And, of course, before that was Sleaford Mods with Armitage Shanks, which I quite enjoyed. Colin was shaking his head quite a lot.
But it was unexpected.
All right.
Very poignant, though.
Yes, yeah. And that's what I love about them is that, like, they've always got something to say in every one of their songs. As they say in that particular song, there's nothing about just love and romance. It's always a bit of social commentary mixed with, like, punk. And, yeah, he doesn't really sing. Like, he kind of, sometimes it sounds kind of
spoken word punk.
Yeah, sometimes it sounds like hip-hop. Like, it's like has hip-hop beats to it. But he doesn't rap fast. Like, he still raps in a very slow, like, methodic sort of manner. But definitely worth checking out if you haven't. That album in particular was called the Mekon, but they have a huge discography. They're actually playing at Glastonbury this year.
But a small tent.
No, I think they play one of the big stages. Nice. You know, they're pretty legit in England. All right, so our last topic of the night. We haven't got much time left, but something we've never talked about on the show. There's been a lot of press coverage lately in different areas talking about stuff locally in Canada, but also across the world. There was a big article about it in Kazakhstan, which is the issue of polygamy, which obviously is the marriage to multiple partners. And typically it's a man marrying multiple wives. And so the question is this, and it's usually on religious grounds, especially in places like Kazakhstan, it's that's the angle. In Canada as well, I think it's like Christian sects that usually are taking part in such practices. So do we think this is acceptable? Is this something as part of a religion? We should just see it as something that is culturally odd to us, but perhaps is the choice of those who take part in it? Or is it a universally abhorrent thing that we should be against? What do you think, Connor?
I mean, it seems like most cultures across the world have sort of figured out this kind of system whereby, you have two people who are soulmates, whatever. They get in, they fall in love, they marry each other. They're each other's best friend and support for eternity is the idea. I think most cultures around the world have kind of independently sort of come across that over the millennia we've sort of existed in societies. Not
there's
everyone.
Exceptions, though.
Oh no, there's absolutely is, but a lot of them though. And you think it's not necessarily a coincidence. There's probably got to be something there. But yeah, begs the question: what's the point of marriage? Which actually is a question that probably is these days quite prominent. Not least of which because the charge towards gay marriage and people's protests against that and people's protest support for it. Questioning, is marriage a religious? Is it purely a religious union of man and woman, or is it simply the union of two people who want to spend their lives together? Should we get married? Should we commit to people for the rest of our lives, or is that a symbol? I don't know.
You're getting away from the question here, though.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is, before we can say whether polygamy is good, bad, or frowned upon, or whether sinful, or prosperous, whatever, kind of need to like figure out, so what is the point of marriage? And then, is it...
Can we extend that?
But yeah, exactly. Basically, if marriage is meant to be the union of two people, then obviously polygamy sounds a bit weird. If marriage is simply the union of people, and, you know, people who'll be together for the rest of their lives, can be soulmates, can rely upon each other, be a little like a family, you could probably have two or three sort of partners in that kind of relationship. As long as if there's a family involved, everyone, you know, helps to raise children together in the right way. To me, the idea doesn't sound right because I think you'd end up just getting bickering and you'd get people siding with each other, and it wouldn't be equal. There's that inherently lack that equality.
Well, I think one of the biggest arguments that would come up against it normally would be, is it exploitive? And the interesting thing I think about that argument is that you could also argue that typical marriages of two people could be exploitive as well. But perhaps it's more likely to be exploitive if there's multiple partners.
Do you want to expand on that idea?
Well, I mean, I have seen documentaries. I think Lou Theroux or somebody went and watched a documentary where they went and like hung out with a polygamous family, and it was basically a man with like four or five wives he had, and they each had children, and basically he had this huge house that he would basically then spend like a day with one family, a day with the next family, and then on like a Sunday he had everybody for dinner, and like they all hung out, and all the wives knew each other, and it was kind of funny because they were like, oh yeah, we kind of gang up on him sometimes, and you know, it's not like it's a very one-sided agreement. And it seemed very consensual, this particular situation and the setup they had. And so...
Yeah, I mean, if everyone's there to support each other, that the whole family of five is sort of unified and they can be each other's support, whether it's, you know, wives to each other or the wives to the husband. And in a sense, you can get all the sort of benefits. You could get the prosperity out of it. You could raise children in a good way with a good community, a good family. So you could achieve things that we tend to associate that sort of family necessity with. I'm sure you probably could.
Yeah. Obviously, the danger is if it becomes a bad situation for people in it. But again, that's an argument you can make about any marriage. And so I feel like we need a better argument of why it's wrong than just simply that some people could be exploited within that circumstances. Yeah. Do you have a better argument?
I mean, to me, it'd be the equality thing. I don't think you could have an equal union between multiple. If there's one set of the equations kind of stacked more heavily than the other. I feel like a colony of different people, and they all like the men and women equal number, or whatever the relationships are, lesbians, gay, whatever, and they all kind of mix and crossed. That might be a bit weird. It's like orgy society, but if they all like came together and loved each other, then at least there could be some equality there. I feel like four wives and one man, or whatever the number is, like inherently, someone's getting more than the rest, and someone's not getting as much as others.
Right, but I think maybe the crux of like how, you know, what is the checks and balance you put in place to allow people to have the freedom that if they want to do that, then, you know, I don't think that society should dictate how people live their lives. And I feel like this would fall under that. As long as within the society, they do have the out, they have the ability to leave, get divorced, and they aren't then, as you say, in an imbalanced relationship where they don't actually have the rights to secede from the relationship and the collective if they feel they want to. I feel like if you have those checks and balances in place, then it's really up to the individuals to decide whether they want to take part in such an activity.
Yeah, but then there's also, I mean, I can't speak because I've never been part of a polygamous family, but I could
really,
I could suggest that, you know, maybe there's a certain amount of peer pressure as well. It depends on, like, because it's not as if like random people are polygamous. As you said, it is usually sort of sectarian. People live together in the same community, so you could kind of be like peer pressured into it, really. Whereas for the most part, the rest of the world at this point,
but you could be peer pressured into anything.
Absolutely. But the idea of, you know, that we have at the moment, two people, man and woman, man and man, woman and woman. The idea is that you're only being peer pressured by people who are saying, oh, you should get into a relationship. Not you should get into a relationship with this guy because we're all in a relationship with this guy, or anything kind of like to that ilk.
But this is still very... I feel like you're assuming nefariousness here, which is
not necessarily nefariousness, just sort of resignation of sorts as well. Just like, yeah. If you're not expecting to search for one person who can be your life partner, you kind of go, oh, well, I guess, you know, this guy's all right. He's got a few wives. Yeah, I guess I'll settle for that. And then is, I mean, yeah, sure, if that's the choice of the individual, that's the choice of the individual. But I don't know. I mean, it throws into consideration a lot of big questions about love and unity and support and family. So I don't know. I just feel like it's a flawed system. It's like communism. It sounds good, but this wouldn't work.
Fair enough. Sorry, we're hitting some tough questions today. There really is. There's no answers to any of these. That is 10 o'clock. It is our time to say goodnight. We will be back next week with a brand new show, episode 79 of 80. We're nearly there. So we'll try and make the last few excellent ones. But last tonight, we're going to leave you with an artist called Heavy Living and their song Feed off their self-titled album. Please enjoy and join us next week. We have been White Noise. See you very soon.